You're now listening to the College Hotline Podcast with your host, John Wilmer.
Welcome to episode 7 of the College Hotline Podcast. I'm your host, John Wilner, and I'd like to thank everybody for listening these last few weeks and also encourage everyone to subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. Could not have a more appropriate guest this week, given the release of the first playoff ranking. Stuart Mandel, the national columnist for Fox Sports, and a guy I consider the go-to source for all things postseason, whether it's the playoffs or the 87 bowl games. Stuart has got his handle on everything. Thank you very much. I know it's been a busy week.
Yeah, absolutely, John. Busy week, but, you know, calming down now.
Good, good. So just your biggest takeaway, what made the biggest impression on you from the first rankings?
Well, A&M over Washington for number 4 obviously stands out. You know, I knew that was a possibility. I didn't think they were going to go there. You know, the message throughout, you know, not just with that situation, but with any number of teams that we asked Kirby Hokut, the chairman, about, strength of schedule was always the justification. And I think that's noteworthy because there have been a lot of changes in the membership on that committee. 7 of the original 12 remain, but there's a bunch of new faces. And it makes me wonder, you know, and we'll see more down the stretch here, you know, whether this particular group is adhering much more rigidly to strength of schedule numbers and not as much eye test or more subjective, you know, people just saying I've watched Washington and I've watched Texas A&M and I think Washington is better. That may not be as big a factor with this year's committee.
What was the phrase they used? Game control in the past.
That was last year, or was it 2 years ago? Last year.
Yeah, that was a new one.
Well, Jeff Long, you know, did a really good job, I thought, in those shows and those conference calls. But you know, people would really look for any little inconsistency or weird phrase he used like that. And Kirby Hokut, I think, is going to stick to the script. Unfortunately for us as writers, I don't think he's going to give us much to work with in these calls down the stretch here.
Gotcha. So I know you wrote the other day that Washington, it really, ultimately, it doesn't matter if the Huskies win out, A&M is not going to block their path. Is there any doubt in your mind that the Huskies are in if they're 13-0?
No. If they're a 13-0 Pac-12 champion, and especially considering their schedule does get stronger down the stretch here, no. I mean, it would take a very, very extreme situation for the committee to leave out an undefeated power conference champ. What this did give me pause about is, you know, if they're a one-loss Pac-12 champ, whereas I feel like most years that team would also have no trouble being in, and you know, I certainly feel a one-loss SEC or Big Ten's not going to have any problem. Maybe Washington's going to have a problem because of that non-conference schedule.
Where would that problem be? What do you think Washington fans should be on the alert for if they're 12-1? Is it the Big Ten runner-up?
Yeah, you know, I don't. The concern isn't a conference champ necessarily, because I still think they would beat out the Big 12 champ. You know, yes, the Big 12 could still produce a one-loss champ, or you know, Oklahoma could win out, and they're already ranked fairly high as a two-loss champ. But I think Washington would still have the better resume, and in particular because of the chance to go beat a top 25 team in the conference championship game. So you know, it's whether a 12-1 Pac-12 champ with only a couple you know, highly ranked teams that they've beaten all season would not have necessarily as good a resume as Michigan going to the championship, Big Ten championship game 12-0 and losing in the championship game, or A&M, since we're already talking about them and they're closely together, A&M runs the table but doesn't reach the SEC title game and they're 11-1. I think that would be the concern.
How about the one I kind of identified was, let's say Ohio State runs the table, beats Michigan, wins the Big Ten, and Michigan is sitting there as a runner-up in their own division with just one loss.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that would be a concern, too. You know, one thing that would be interesting in that scenario is that they would have, is that if Colorado makes the Pac-12 title game and Washington beats them, they would have a common opponent there. Michigan beat Colorado early in the season. You know, Michigan that doesn't beat Ohio State, would have a good resume, but I don't know that it would be so far and above because, you know, first of all of their big games to this point have been at home. So they beat a good Wisconsin team, but they did it at home. They clobbered Penn State, but they did that at home. You know, really, Ohio State is their only opportunity to beat a highly ranked team on the road. And Washington just did that at Utah. So, you know, is that a possibility? Yeah, I don't think that's as clear cut, though.
Gotcha. Washington and Michigan would have the common opponent. They could compare scores against Rutgers, and that wouldn't work out for the Huskies.
Forgot about that other. So they have two. They could have two common opponents.
Yeah. If you can call it that. Do you think the committee will look as deep as scheduling intent? For instance, you know, I don't remember exactly when Washington signed their deal with Rutgers, but Rutgers was better at that point, and the Huskies had hoped it would be a better game. You think they'll get that detailed?
Barry Alvarez has said in the past, told others, that he looks at that. He's a pretty influential, maybe the most influential voice on that committee. But I don't know that that's true of the majority of them. You know, I've certainly heard others say that they're not going to get too bogged down in that. The schedule is the schedule. You know, the reason I think you're concerned if you're a one-loss Washington is that's basically the exact thing that happened to Baylor 2 years ago. Now, you could say maybe it wouldn't have mattered. Ohio State wins that Big Ten title game 59-0. Maybe they're getting in regardless. But I did hear after the fact from people involved that they would have liked to have seen Baylor play just one decent non-conference opponent. It didn't have to be Alabama. But, you know, they didn't play anybody. They played some, you know, a couple Conference USA or something like that and an FCS. And so pretty similar to Washington. So that's where they could potentially run in trouble. Of course, the difference is Baylor also didn't have the opportunity to play in a championship game. Washington would.
Right. Very true. Do you see any other Pac-12 team having a remote chance of getting in? And obviously it would have to be a two-loss champion.
Yeah. I mean, believe it or not, I think there's a path there for Colorado. Now, obviously there would have to be a lot of carnage in the other conferences, but if you consider that they were surprisingly high, at least compared to the AP and coaches polls in the first place. And then you've got a chance if you're Colorado down the stretch, you know, your last two regular season games, Washington State is ranked by the committee. Utah is ranked by the committee. They then make the championship game and beat, you know, 12-0 or 11-1 Washington in the championship game. That's a pretty strong finish. You would still have to be in a situation where there's room for a two-loss conference champ where you're, which I think would require some major upsets in the other conferences. But, you know, certainly the path is there.
How about Utah?
You know, similar boat, obviously. Two-loss team that has a chance to beat Colorado, you know, who will be ranked probably in that last game as well, and on the road, no less. So pretty similar path, I would say, to the one that Colorado has.
Those teams would need probably Louisville to take on a second loss, and maybe even a Florida or an A&M probably.
I mean, it would be a really interesting window into just how important does the committee hold winning a conference to be. You know, I thought that was the other night was not a good sign for Louisville. You know, if they were going to try to make it without winning their division, you were going to have to see the committee come out in those rankings and have them a little bit higher and say, you know, they haven't played the world's toughest schedule, but they blew out Florida State and they've been mostly dominant and very close loss on the road to Clemson. You know, we think they're one of the five best teams or whatnot. If they're some number seven now and they really don't play anybody of note down the stretch other than Houston, and even Houston's not ranked anymore, you know, would that necessarily be the case? Would 11-1 non-champion Louisville necessarily be higher than a 11-2 Pac-12 champ? It's actually, you know, reminiscent of last year with Stanford. That they ended up getting much closer than I think people might have expected for a two-loss team, and really it was the fact that they won a Power 5 championship.
Do you think the Pac-12, you know, for those who don't know, Stuart lives in Northern California. I won't divulge anything more specific than that. But having moved out from New York, I think you've seen that there is some kind of, however you want to define East Coast bias or just a West Coast challenge with the time zones, you've kind of experienced it here the last few years. Do you envision the Pac-12 getting a fair shake and the committee paying, you know, close enough attention and treating the Pac-12 like it would treat everybody else?
You know, yeah, I think they get a fair shake from the committee. And if you remember in the first year of it, I remember noticing that the Pac-12 South teams were all higher in the committee rankings than the, you know, this was the year Arizona won 10 games.
Yep.
They were higher. Utah was higher. In fact, I just saw a stat that Utah is one of a handful of teams that's been in every committee ranking over the last 3 years. So I do think they get a fair shake in there. The question is, you know, the committee members, just like fans, have, you know, brand bias, I would say, more than East Coast bias.
Yep.
And we all do. You know, we're all inclined to think that Texas is better than they are or be skeptical if, you know, Purdue rises up and has a good season. And in this case of the Pac-12 this year, I just get the sense among the general public, not necessarily the committee, that people are not giving them as much respect because Oregon is bad and Stanford is down and USC, although they've gotten much better, got off to a rough start. And those are the teams that people just recognize. Those are the most recognizable brands in the conference. It's a lot harder for a fan in Ohio or Alabama to take it seriously when they look at the standings and it's Washington State. You know, Washington Pac-12 fans know when Washington was a powerhouse. I don't know that most people in other parts of the country do. And they see Washington State, they see Colorado, who's been so bad for so long. And I think that the, you know, default instinct is, well, the conference must not be very good this year.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I also wonder, if you look at the Pac-12's non-conference resume, I think the best win is Stanford over Kansas State. It's just
that's not good.
Yeah, it's not. And it's just not very good. I mean, a couple teams beat BYU, Stanford beat K-State, Arizona State beat Texas Tech. But, you know, you look at it and Notre Dame, I think Notre Dame's problems, are going to hurt the Pac-12. But they don't have anything close to what the Big Ten and the SEC can claim non-conference, and that could
that's how these conferences, you know, we see this in basketball with the RPI and the emphasis on the RPI. Basically, you know, once you get through those games in December, and the hierarchy is set, because then the teams just go and play each other. So wherever the conference kind of RPI standings are after those first 11 games, pretty much stay the same, and then it's just shuffling the deck. You know, which six Big Ten teams are going to make it. And we see that to some degree here in football. There's such a smaller sample size, obviously. But just take a look at, you know, why does the Big Ten have five teams in the top 12? Well, it all started when Wisconsin beat LSU. So then Wisconsin has respect. The teams that beat Wisconsin get credit for beating them. Ohio State goes and wins convincingly at Oklahoma, which boosts them. And then so then Penn State beating Ohio State boosts Penn State. It's all kind of circular, but you know, I think that that's hurting the Pac-12 this year, and I think it hurt Stanford last year. Obviously, losing to Northwestern, hurt their cause as well.
When you look at the Pac-12 bowl situation, and Stuart, for those who don't know, Stuart every week does a full 40 games bowl predictions. What do you think? The Rose Bowl is pretty much bound to take, let's say Washington jumps into the playoff, Rose Bowl would be bound to take the team that's next highest ranked in the final committee standings. Who do you think the Rose Bowl would want?
That's a great question. And by the way, it's not necessarily set in stone, but they, you know, when it came up last year, you know, Ohio State and Iowa came down, it was pretty close in the rankings, and there was a lot of thought going into the last week that, well, they're going to take Ohio State because Ohio State has such a bigger fan base and whatnot. And they had to come out a couple times and make a statement and say, barring, you know, I forget what the exact wording was, but barring some extenuating circumstance, we're always going to take the next highest ranked team. Who would they want? Because of what we just said about the fact that these are programs that haven't been as dominant lately, I mean, they have to know that if Colorado makes the Rose Bowl, they're going to bring a ton of people. If Utah were to make the Rose Bowl, in fact, there's a strange kind of, I think, incorrect perception among the Pac-12 bowls. When we saw this last year, they kind of thumb their nose at Utah. I think they still think of Utah as being in the Mountain West. That is a rabid, rabid fan base. If Utah made the Rose Bowl, they would fill every seat that they're allocated and then some. But I don't know if they realize that. So I don't think they might frown a little bit on Washington State, because if you remember the last time they were in the Rose Bowl, there were empty seats. But other than that, I think they would have to feel pretty good about any of these teams that either haven't been there in a long time or have never been there.
Yeah, you're right. There are a couple of there's a little bit of leeway for them in terms of who they take with the extenuating circumstances. But it would take a serious extenuating circumstance.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it would be. I mean, I don't know if it would be like the team. I think it would be. I think I saw somebody allude to, 3 years ago, Wisconsin went to 3 straight Rose Bowls. By the third one,
yeah,
they're pretty apathetic about it. I think it would be something like that.
Yeah, I think that that makes the most sense. I thought that maybe that there was some discussion in the committee room last year about how to place Iowa relative to Ohio State to make it easier for the Rose Bowl to justify taking Iowa.
I think that's highly possible. Now, if anybody thought going into it that they would that having Iowa would work to their disadvantage. I mean, Iowa brought 60,000 people to that game, probably. I don't think Ohio State would have. I mean, Ohio State's a bigger brand, and you'd probably get a higher TV rating. But I don't think their fans would have been. Their fans wanted to be in the playoff last year. Rose Bowl was a consolation to them. They're always going to have a better crowd when they take a program or a team that hasn't been there in a long time. And of course, I assume Colorado's never been there. I can't say for sure, but they were in the Big Eight for all those years, and certainly Utah's never been there.
Yeah, Utah is that is a heck of a fan base. They're a lot. I think they're a lot like Oregon in their passion. You know, it's they would fill every seat.
Salt Lake City is a big college football market. I don't know why people don't realize that, but like, case in point, just from my own experience, when I get calls to go on radio stations, sports talk shows around the country, I get the most by far from Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
To the point where I started to wonder if they had, 8 sports talk stations there, but no, they're coming from the same 2 stations. But, there's no NFL team. College football is their thing in the fall. And I don't think that, and because of BYU too. And I don't think that other parts of the country realize that.
Last topic before I let you go. And this is something, I always get asked when I go on radio shows or talk to fans, when are they going to go to 8? And the contract has got, 9 more years, I think, after this year. What is your best guess as to when they expand the playoff?
Well, I've pushed that back. Coming into it, I just assumed halfway through, when the bowls have all rotated through an equal number of times is when they would do it. What I didn't anticipate is that the first 2 years would be so controversy free, because I can tell you that amongst people in college football, there's really no appetite for it right now. They're very happy with the system they have. But what kind of crazy scenario could happen as soon as this year that would tick off enough people to start that push again? But even so, these things move so slowly that if there's no push now, and to do it halfway through, you'd probably have to make that change within the next couple of years. Now, I don't necessarily see that happening. I think it might make the full 12 years.
Isn't it basically a matter of at what point would the Big Ten or the SEC get ticked off enough to push for the change?
Yeah, probably. Probably the SEC more than the Big Ten. There's major reluctance in college football about – there's major I think that – I always thought for years that the alarmists about, oh my gosh, we can't go to even a 14 playoff, it would ruin the regular season, was ridiculous. And as you've seen, I think if anything, it's enhanced it.
Yep.
But there are definitely concerns about 8, because at that point, if you say before the season even starts, we know that 5 of the teams are going to be the 5 conference champs. then the individual games aren't as high stakes. Really, the conference championship game is where that would get determined. So there's definitely a lot of concerns. And also, TV, you know,
sure.
From what I understand, they love this setup because ESPN, you know, has such a huge investment in both the regular season and in the playoff that it's kind of the best of both worlds for them. If it were to go to eight, first of all, they would have to pay way more money for that. And then it might erode some of their regular season games. So
yeah.
I don't sense much of a push for it right now, but, you know, get back to me if, you know, two ACC teams make it and instead of two SEC teams or something like that.
Yeah. Could you see a situation where they used six teams as a bridge and they played the bottom four played off on campus in mid-December before taking a Christmas break?
The problem with that is the minute you expand this at all, it becomes the moment when they're going to have to guarantee the group of five a spot in there. There's no way they could say we're expanding the six in that sixth spot, and it's the five power champs, and then the sixth spot is open without major backlash from that part of it. So I don't think that those five commissioners would want that. I think they would want eight so they can be guaranteed. If they're going to expand, they would want eight so they can be guaranteed that, for instance, some of those scenarios we talked about, right? Ohio State goes 12. Michigan goes 12-0 but loses in the championship game. They would want to make sure that team can still make the playoff.
I got you. All right. So last thing, your picks for the semifinalists based most reasonable scenarios based on schedules remaining. Who do you like?
You know, I hate to be boring, but you know, right now I've mostly been leaning on I guess what are now four of the top five. But I will say that, you know, I'm sticking with Alabama. I'm sticking with Clemson. I think that, you know, it's hard to have this faith in Ohio State right now with the way they've played lately. But a big part of me just thinks, you know, like I said, Michigan hasn't been tested on the road. And it's just hard for me to imagine Urban Meyer losing at home to Michigan with a playoff berth on the line. So I think they could maybe upset the apple cart there. But you know, it's hard for me to look much further past them and their number six.
Committee would certainly like it to be pretty much that simple, that's for sure.
Yeah. And really they're due for something much more chaotic than that.
They are.
And I think the thing that would make it chaotic that hasn't happened to them yet is a major upset in a conference championship game. You know, what if Clemson is 12? Here's a good one, actually. Clemson that we've talked about on our podcast, the Audible. Clemson is 12-0 and Louisville is 11-1, and the 9-3 Virginia Tech or North Carolina wins the ACC title game. You know, what do they do? Do they can't take, I don't think they would take the 10-3 champ. So they still take Clemson, or does the ACC get not left out entirely? You know, that's the kind of messy situation that they haven't had to deal with yet.
Yeah, that will be fun to see if they have to squirm through that one. So I appreciate it. So Stuart's Twitter handle at SL Mandel, and he's got a podcast called The Audible on FoxSports.com with Bruce Feldman, which is you guys post that every Wednesday, right?
We do two a week, and they go up Monday and Wednesday evening.
Gotcha. Those are must listens. Thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate it, and I hope the next few weeks are busy but fun for you.
This is a fun time of year. Let's. I'm waiting for that chaos to erupt.
Yep, me too. Thank you so much.
Thanks, John.
Appreciate it.